I think just the transition is the hardest part. I know this is the first time they've been through this. Taking your life and uprooting your life in an hour is difficult. For me, I've been through it, so I kind of knew the things that were going to come with that. For younger guys, I think that's the toughest part, trying to figure out that whole thing with clothes and your car and just getting your life back in order. As far as the basketball, I know they'll get up to speed and I'll get up to speed quickly and just try to get everything else back into a cohesive unit.
You are locked on Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball Podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We're going to talk about Tuesday's games, we're going to update you on the Caris LeVert injury, and then we're going to preview a monster Wednesday in the NBA where there are 11 games on. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, let's start where we always do.
Monstrous line of the night.
Yep, that is a good place to start. It goes to Jim Harden of the Houston Rockets, 22 points. 5 rebounds, 11 assists, 3 steals. He hit a couple of threes. He had a block as well. He's really cranking at the moment. Hard to say whether it is the absence of Carmelo Anthony, the fact that he's getting a bit healthier, or that some of those weird shots at the rim that weren't going in are now starting to go in with Harden. He is putting in some really strong performances again. He's going to be that top 2, top 3 fantasy guy this season. Maybe the scoring isn't quite where it was last season, where he averaged 30 points per game. He's a little bit under that at the moment because his usage is down 2 percentage points. So that's a big factor in that they're not getting to the line as often and not hitting his free throws at quite as high a rate. But if he gets back from 79 to 85% and 10 times instead of 9 times per game, then he can very easily make up that difference. So it's just more business as usual for Jim Harden after a slowish start to the season. Good to see him back going, because if you took him with those first couple of picks, you're happy with the way these results are rolling at the moment.
Waiver wire line of the night.
This guy is also your deep leaguer of the night because he is rostered in just 3% of leagues over on Yahoo, and it is Harden's teammate, Jim Ennis III. Ennis has struggled so far this season, but not so much in this game against the Nuggets. 34 minutes for Ennis, 16 points with 4 rebounds, 2 triples, an assist, a steal, and 2 blocks on red-hot shooting, 6 of 8 from the field, and he hit both of his free throws as well. He hasn't even been a top 200 guy this season. I don't think that this performance is going to necessarily change that. He got some extra minutes because he was shooting so well. Melo was out with the illness, and also the Comet Gary Clark had to go back to the locker room for about half a quarter with a knee problem. So that did give Ennis an additional chunk of minutes. The Rockets also ran a really short rotation, only 8 men in their rotation, so Ennis's numbers were pushed back up. This is his third double-figure scoring game for the season, and both of those other games came on plus 60% shooting. So we see that he can produce when the shots go in, and when the shots don't go in, you don't get a huge amount from Ennis. The 2 blocks here were nice. Hadn't blocked a shot in the previous 4 games. So he is really just a deep league specialist. You might stretch it to 16-teamers. I think that would be okay, but wouldn't want to go any shallower than that, even with the absence of Carmelo Anthony. I don't think we should be relying upon Ennis to put up lines that that approximate this all that often. 75% shooting, I don't think is really a great expectation or anything along those lines for Jim Ennis as we move forward in this season. The Locked On Podcast Network is doing unprecedented things on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Locked On NBA Net to get all of your Locked On hosts in one single feed. Great for breaking news, injury reports, all that sort of stuff. And on Instagram, we are giving you the biggest stories of the day in the Instagram story. So Locked On NBA Net on both of those social media platforms for the best basketball info you can find. Let's move into the next one.
Young Gun of the Night.
The Young Gun of the Night goes to Monty Morris of the Denver Nuggets. Morris was fantastic for the second consecutive game. He played 31 minutes in this one, 19 points, 2 rebounds, and 6 assists with 3 triples on 64% shooting. That's 7 of 11 from the field. We've seen a couple of these big games from Morris earlier on against the Lakers, where he had 20 points on 9 shots with 7 assists, was strong, and now he has 16 assists in the last 2 games combined. But it's the shooting that sort of takes him from being a viable option into a waiver wire type of guy. Interestingly, in this game, Trey Lyles and Malik Beasley barely played so that Morris could get these 31 minutes. He also played 28 minutes last game, and he looks great out there, especially paired with those starters, moving Gaz Harris up to the 3, Jamal Murray up to the 2. Morris, he didn't quite close the game because Wancho came in late, but he was putting up some pretty solid numbers. And if you need an assists guy, he is averaging 4 assists per game in 23 minutes a game so far this season. That is valuable enough. When Isaiah Thomas comes back, when Fartin Will Barton comes back, it's hard to find a significant role here for Morris. And even now, his minutes are fluctuating. Even look at the last 6 games, 12, 19, 27, 22, 28, and 31 minutes. So you know, 3 or 4 of those games are really strong, and the others, you know, not so enticing. So he's an interesting stream type of a player, especially because the Nuggets do play again on Thursday, a low-volume day against the Hawks. So you could add him in there and maybe get 6 or 7 assists out of Monty Morris in that matchup. And then they play again on Saturday as well. But then the following week, they play high-volume Monday, Wednesday, Friday type days, which are traditionally your higher-volume days. So he has, you know, some interest. I really like what he can do as a second-year player, but his long-term future in terms of, you know, spot in the rotation is far from assured just with the return of both Thomas and Barton. I guess at some point going to happen. I tell a man's not hot. The dart of the night goes to Nick Batum with only 3 games on. You didn't have to have too poor of a night to get the dart of the night, and Batum's line was fine. 11, 5, and 3 in a game that they got spanked by the Cleveland Cavaliers. Nothing to really be too concerned about with Batum there. He is the 82nd ranked player this season. A lot of people still come to me, do I drop Nick Batum? Look, the last couple of games haven't been excellent for him, averaging 8 points, but his ability to get rebounds, get assists, which are way down this season, that's something bearing in mind, that he averaged 5.5, 5.9, 5.8 the previous 3 seasons. He's at 3.8 this season. So there is, I guess, element of concern there that Batum's assist numbers may not bounce back up. His shooting is okay, pretty good this season, actually 45 and 78%, including 40% from 3. And even though he's scoring under 10 points per game, he is still providing enough value to be a fantasy guy. And I wouldn't be considering dropping Nick Batum in 12-team leagues. And I wouldn't really even be considering it in 10-team leagues, despite this this lack of assists that is an issue for him, considering so much of his value came from assists, even with the low assist numbers so far this season. He is still managing to put out, you know, decent enough performances by putting up numbers in some other categories, which is always a positive thing to see when that happens, when your main thing isn't going and you're still able to help in other areas, which is what is happening for Nick Batum at this current time. So he is your dud of the night, but not really, nothing too bad there with Batum's performance. The best net rating of the night goes to David Nwaba of the Cleveland Cavaliers. He was fantastic in this game for the Cavs, plus 91.3. But remember, Kyle Korver was out. Kevin Love, Sam Decker, George Hill, all those guys were out. Hard to say if Nwaba actually can get a rotation spot. I don't think he's ever going to get enough minutes to be impactful in 12 or probably even 14 team fantasy leagues. But he did show that he can be a positive player. While the worst net rating went to Malik Monk as a negative 68.6 on the day, he's really struggled the last 2 or 3 games with his shooting. And I don't think there's much point in having Malik Monk in your 12-team leagues just at this point. Probably the biggest news from the day is the reports about Caris LeVert. Now, yesterday I said it was 99.9% sure that he'd broken his leg and he was out for the season. I gave myself that minuscule amount of wiggle room because it turns out he didn't break his leg. An absolutely amazing result for Caris that leg wasn't fractured. It turns out he had a dislocated ankle. Woj and Shams both reporting that he will return this season. But if you did happen to drop him, or if someone in your league did happen to drop him, I'd be a little bit cautious about adding him for a couple of reasons. It's not a great injury. there's going to be some sort of ligament damage in there, not full tears or anything like that, but strains, no doubt, with the movement of that leg. It's going to be, I would guess, a return some point in January or the All-Star break. By then, the Nets, without their best player, Caris LeVert, probably won't be anywhere near playoff contention. And I don't think there's any need to rush a bloke, especially with the Nets' medical staff, which is great for getting guys back healthy, but notoriously slow in getting guys back on the court. They take their time and they take a prudent approach. We saw that with D'Angelo Russell last season. We saw that with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, who had a minor groin tweak in August, and took him 3-4 months to get back onto the court. So there is no way, I think, that he is going to be coming back in February, LeVert this is, and playing 30 minutes a night. In fact, if he did ever get back to 30 minutes a night, I would assume it would be in April, and by then your fantasy seasons are almost over. If you don't have an IR spot, I don't think you can really consider holding on to LeVert. Look, maybe he's back in 6 to 8 weeks. That's true, but 6 to 8 weeks is a very long time to go with a zero on your roster spot. You can put him in your IR if you've got one, but then there might become a situation where someone who's out for a week can become IR eligible, and you may need to use that spot. I just think that the Nets are going to be extremely cautious here with LeVert, with this injury, and with his budding stardom and importance to this franchise, that they won't be pushing him back. And again, when we talk, and I'm a huge Caris LeVert fan, like you guys know that, but it's not like we're talking about Kevin Durant or Giannis Antetokounmpo, where when he comes back, you know you're going to get this excellent type production. He's had a breakout season so far, but he is still the 80th ranked player in fantasy, despite having this breakout start. So that's not excellent. It's pretty good, but I think he's going to be a borderline top 100 guy when he does come back. Now, maybe I'm wrong on this. I was wrong that I thought he fractured his leg. Or I think everybody in the Nets organization were convinced that he'd fractured his leg. I am not convinced that he is going to be back, or he's not going to be back in the 2018 portion of this season, which is 6 weeks. I think we can rule that out fairly safely. Let's go the 99.9% again. I think January, end of January, maybe. My guess would be All-Star break. They maybe get him in a couple of days before the All-Star break. They ease him back through the end of February, and maybe you get 27 a night from him through March, which puts him at about the 100th ranked player in that time, which is okay, but it's hardly worth taking zeros for 2 months at least to have him on your roster. So that's how I would be looking at that. I wouldn't be burning waiver priorities. I wouldn't be dropping productive players. I wouldn't be stashing him on my roster without an injured reserve slot. Or in a roto league, when I talk injured reserve slots, if you're in a roto league that has games played limits, or in a weekly changes head-to-head leagues, you can consider that the same as an injured reserve spot, because those guys just sit on the bench and you don't use them. So when I say injured reserve, that is exactly the same scenario as a roto league with games limit or a weekly changes league. Your bench functions as your injured reserve in those formats. So in that sort of situation, it's okay. But within a daily changes, no injured reserve scenario, I really don't think that it's worth it for LeVert. Unfortunately, because he has obviously has taken a big step forward this season. If your company is looking for a new way to reach customers, you could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcasts. Our demographic is 98% male, the old sausage sizzle, higher educated and higher earning than traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast by emailing me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Let's go into these games now, try and break down what we saw through the three games. There wasn't a ton of interest. Listen to me dissuading you from listening. There wasn't a ton that happened in today's action, but we will, of course, go through them and talk about the games. The first one was a blowout. The Cleveland Cavaliers, 113, smashed the Charlotte Hornets. They just couldn't miss, especially to start this game. The Cavs, a really weird performance, but we got a big night out of Jeremy Lamb, who had 22 points with 6 rebounds and 3 steals. The big minutes there. Now, we thought it was going to be Miles Bridges who took the minutes that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist left around. They went to Lamb, where he played those 32 minutes. And that was a strong performance. He is a top 50 player over the last 2 weeks in only 25 minutes per game, largely on the basis of the fact he's getting 1.7 steals. Now, previously, look, that translates to a 2.4 steals per 36, right? Last season, he was at 1.1. The year before, 0.9. The year before, 1.2. The year before, 1.2. So to say that he is generating steals at a well above career rate would be underselling it. Some of that may be the introduction of a new coach and a new defensive scheme. I'm a little bit hesitant on buying in that Jeremy Lamb's going to be a 1.5 steals per game guy when he's absolutely shown no inkling of being able to do that at any point in his career. But if you want to go and grab him in 12 team leagues, I think it's a fine thing to do. This was a nice performance, but prior to this, he just wasn't playing this amount of minutes. Let's go through his previous six games. 19, 25, 24, 23, 24, 23 minutes. Now, granted, he'd scored in double digits in all but one of those and had a couple of decent rebound games, and the steals had been fairly consistent, you know, useful sort of numbers, but the minutes are way down. Fine in a 12-teamer. I think the steals level can come down. He's also shooting an astonishing 93% from the line. Now, he is a very good free throw shooter, but I think we're going to expect a 6 to 7 to 8 percentage point drop in that free throws, which will impact his overall numbers as well. His two best fantasy numbers for the season, in fact, the only two categories in which he is a Z-score positive, are his steals and his free throw percentage. Two numbers which could vary, or are significantly higher than his career numbers, which could come back down to earth. Cody Zeller was horrendous against Tristan Thompson, so he was replaced early in the second half by Bismack Biyombo. Couldn't get a rebound. Zeller's a real fringe guy, obviously. Batum, we've talked about already. While Kemba Walker just couldn't hit anything, don't need to worry too much about Kemba there. 7 points on 16 shots is an absolute stinker, as is Malik Monk, who had 6 points on 13 shots. I think we can move on from Monk in 12-team formats. For the Cavs, Colin Sexton, Padawan, he played 33 minutes and had 16, 5, and 4. The inefficiency is always going to be a problem, but you don't mind that overall production. He's a fine 12-team league guy while George Hill is out, but assuming you don't have super high expectations. Well, Jordy Clarkson shot the ball well, 24 points on 15 shots, very little else as he is wont to do. He has that 12-team value as well. There was no Kyle Korver. There was no Chetty Osman in this one as well. Larry Nance started. He played 35 minutes, 7 points, 12 rebounds, and a triple one from Nance. So he hit a three, so that was interesting. Osman is likely out on Wednesday as well, so Nance is going to continue to have value. But with how Tristan Thompson is playing, when these other guys who are going to play at power forward, and we know that Larry Drew was basically forced into playing Larry Nance at power forward, I think that his value is going to dip. So you have him for now, but we'll see how that goes when those other guys return. As for Thompson, 21 rebounds, including 8 offensive, 11 points and 5 assists. He is, over the last 2 weeks, a top 90 player, and this is largely because he's huge rebounding and huge field goal percentage. He's at 62% over his last 6 games and 13 rebounds over his last 6 games. He is offering you nothing else in a positive at all, a big negative in threes, in free throw percentage, blocks and steals he gets none of, but if you need field goal percentage and rebounds, Thompson can provide it. So again, don't be like swayed, like, oh man, he's the 84th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He's a must add, because if you're well ahead in rebounds and field goal percentage, or you're significantly behind in those categories and it's not going to make a difference, then he provides literally nothing for your team. Now, you could add him and try and trade him, but there are a couple of things here with Thompson, including that insane rebound rate, which probably does dip. He is going at, over the last 6 games, 15.5 per 36. Last year, he was under 12. So that is a 33% increase in what he did last season. So there may be an element of regression coming there for Tristan Thompson. The plumber, J.R. Smith, had 5 assists with 13 points in a whopping 39 minutes, but really just a stream specialist at this point. Let's go on to the next game. We're looking at the Houston Rockets and the Denver Nuggets. The Rockets win 109-99. I've talked about Jim Harden. I've talked about Jim Ennis. PJ Tucker, who was ill, apparently played 41 minutes. He had 12 and 6 with 4 triples and a steal. He is really a 12-team steal specialist. That's it. If you don't need steals, then you don't need much else from him. Or you're not getting much else from him. Now, I talk about this a lot as well, is that steals towards the back end of fantasy rankings or values or drafts or whatever skews guys by 20, 30, 40, 50 spots. And I think that's what we're seeing with Tucker there. So he is really a steal specialist. Capella had 24 and 9. While the Comet, disappointing game from Gary Clark, who'd been in the mid-20s every game apart from this one, only 15 minutes with 0 points. Now, he is a defensive type specialist, a steals and blocks type of guy. He's more that 16 team league player, but I do imagine his minutes will go higher than this in the other games. This was a little bit of a weird one. On to the Nuggets. Nikola Jokic had 14, 12, and 7. Gaz Harris, finally.
Nice, Gary!
15 points with 4 steals and 3 triples. Prior to this game, he had been shooting under 30% from 3, and I have pre-recorded a buy low, sell high segment, which you audio guys will hear a bit later on, where I talked about Gary as a buy low guy. Hopefully this gets him back on track. Jamal Murray had 15 points with 5 assists. The shots at least were going in for him as well, 54% conversion. While Wancho started, had 6 and 9 in his 39 minutes. Really, he's probably going to continue to start, but he is more a 16-team league sort of a player. I mentioned it earlier, Trey Lyles only 13 minutes and Malik Beasley only 6 minutes, as Wancho and Monty Morris basically got all of those 5th starter minutes and 6th man type minutes. Let's go on to the last game of the night. The Atlanta Hawks lose to the Golden State Warriors, 103-110. The artist, formerly known as Taurean Prince, hit some shots. 22 points on 14 shots with 4 triples and 4 assists. He has been dropped in leagues. I don't know why. He should not be on any waiver wire, so make sure you grab him. While Jeremy Lin had 10 with 4 assists, and Trae Young struggled. 4 points for Young, but I think we look at the positives here. 5 rebounds, 9 assists, and 3 steals. It was a tough go of things shooting, but at least he brought the assist, and the steals, which have been lacking from Young's game, they finally came in. So I wouldn't be too panicky here. Bazemore had 18 and 2 as well, and Alex Len played 32 minutes, but remember, the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, was out, so that gave Len those extra minutes. Quickly talk about DeAndre Bembry, who I think is an really interesting player. His passing is supreme. His vision is really good. He had 13 points, only 1 assist, but mainly because the passes he was throwing, the shots didn't go in. 3 steals and a block. He hit a nice pull-up 3 on the three-quarter time buzzer as well. He's putting in some nice numbers. He's more of a 14-team league guy who you would hope that if the percentages could come up, maybe could move into a 12-team-like sphere, averaging 42 and 57 and true shooting of 50, which is, you know, quite a negative drain, and therefore also impacting his points category, which takes away a lot of the value. But averaging 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.5 steals, and half a block, there's something there. It's still just a 14-team league guy at the moment, but he looks pretty strong, and he's got an opportunity playing as a backup point guard, backup small forward. When if trades go down with someone like Kent Bazemore, he along with Kevin Huerta, could step into some extra minutes for this Hawks team. The Wizard Amari Spellman was putrid, 0 points in 14 minutes. Of course, he is not a 12 or a 14-team league guy, more of a 16-teamer. We'll have some good games, we'll have some bad ones, and we know clearly where this one falls. On to the Warriors with Draymond Green suspended for having an issue with KD. I'd love to know what actually went on. For the Warriors to come out and actually suspend him, something significant must have happened. You're talking, you know, all this rumors about KD's free agency weighing on this squad, and you know, KD, you know, people lip reading what he said, and this is why I'm out. Who knows if any of that's true, but Green was out of this game. So there's obviously something significant going on that they felt the need to suspend Draymond. This is what Draymond is like, just a real pain in the ass type of a guy. And clearly some friction. Durant, 29 and 6 with 2 steals, and Clay had 24, 5 and 4 with 3 steals. Good production with those guys with Dre and Steph out. Well, Jonas Jerebko started in place of Green, played 25 minutes and had 14 and 13 with 4 triples. That's great, but Green will be back next game, so Jerebko will go back to a minutes load in the teens and provide value for 20 teamers. Quinny Cook bounced back, 18, 4, and 6. So as long as Steph is out, the Warriors have 3 more games this week. I expect Steph to miss 2 of those games. So I think Cook still has that value, but not at the expense of a guy like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander or Derek White, who is on a waiver wire. If they are on a waiver wire, I would happily grab those guys for 18 weeks of value versus 3 games of value or 2 games of value for Cook. Surprised to see Andre Iguodala play 26 minutes here. 8, 5, and 5. We know who he is. He is just consistently 16-team league worthy. While Jordy Bell, we see the flashes from Bell. The minutes just aren't there. 11 minutes with Green out is disappointing. 6 points more. Damo Jones had 2 and 5 in his 18 minutes. And that will that'll wrap up the action from this day, this Tuesday in the NBA. Quite a low volume day and a low interest day, I guess, with very little seemingly going on. Hey guys, let's look at some players who are perhaps undervalued and potentially overvalued based on what they've done for the last couple of weeks. So maybe some buy low and sell high opportunities for you. We'll start with the players who have been underperforming over the last couple of weeks, and we will start with LeBron James of the Los Angeles Lakers. LeBron is the 32nd ranked player over the last 2 weeks. And the major reason for that is his rebounds and his assist numbers are well down. Just 6 rebounds per game over those last 6 games and under 6 assists, which for a guy that was averaging 9 assists per game is a significant dip down. Throw in the fact that his free throws are always a problem. That has caused LeBron to slide right down outside the top 30. Now, there was always somewhat of a concern with LeBron this season. How would he fit with Rajon Rondo, Lance Stephenson, Lonzo Ball? And not to say that LeBron's not the best player in the world still, but would he be the guy that dominates and takes everything away from those guys? Or would he lose some of what makes him so special from a fantasy perspective? And at the moment, it looks like he is the one who is actually losing out so far this season. He is still the 8th ranked player for the year, averaging 26, almost 8 boards and 7 assists. But over the last couple of games, things are trending down for James, and it doesn't help that his free throw percentage has dropped down to be a significant negative in that time as well, just 65% from the line. Another guy who is underperforming at the moment, a guy that, you know, I feel like can be a top 20 player, and that is Devin Booker. He is the 50th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, was returning from that injury, but still has played 37 minutes per game over those last 6 games. And the major reason why he is so far down here is he is shooting under 40% from the field and under 29% from three. He's still averaging 22 points and over 6 assists. He's getting a steal a game, which would be a career high for Booker as well. But those percentages are really, really hurting him. And that has bumped him down for a guy who could be a top 20 type challenger to being this guy who is hovering around that 50 mark. We know the stress on Booker to create offense for this team is pretty large, but I don't imagine he's going to stick at this level of shooting. You're under 30% from three. He is a better shooter than that. He was at 38% from three last season. He is at 33% over the course of this season, and that will tick back up, and that will push him back into that top 30 and top 25 type of range. So if you do have an owner that is panicking with Devin Booker, you can attempt that buy low on him. Jimmy Butler, the next guy we want to talk about, currently ranked 74th over the last 2 weeks. New team, so there is still some concern there, but over those last 4 games, he was playing 40 minutes a night because Tom Thibodeau is literally insane. 20 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, and 1.5 steals, but the efficiency was well down from Butler. This is a guy who's an 85% free throw shooter, and over those past 4 games, 71% from the line. Some of that is mental, some of that is him checking out, no doubt, but that will bump back up. I've got no doubt about that, and his numbers will start to rise. So if you're looking, and if you're looking at rankings and you're really swayed by rankings and recent rankings when making decisions, you got to look more deeper into it. But more importantly, if there's someone in your league who is really swayed by rankings, that's the sort of move you should be trying to make. You know, throwing out the unknown about how Butler's going to fit in Philadelphia. Say, look at this, even playing 40 minutes a night, he's still outside the top 70 for the last 2 weeks. He's not right. He's going to lose usage, blah, blah, blah. And his usage was low over those 2 weeks, only 20% usage, which is, you know, average 100% usage for 5 guys on the court. If you're getting 20, you're right on the average mark there. So, you know, a disappointing couple of weeks for Butler, but I do think that he is going to pick it back up. The next guy we talk about is Eric Bledsoe. He is the 87th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. And like I think we talked about in this segment last week with Bledsoe, one of the large reasons for that is the lack of steals that he is getting. Just 1.2 per game over the last 6 games when he is a 1.5 to 2 steals per game guy. His usage is concerningly low. He was at almost 26% last season. He's down at 21 for this season, 22 over the last couple of weeks. And the free throw percentage is down as well at 75% over those last 6 games with only 29 minutes. I think the minutes will rise back up. There were some blowouts in there for the Bucks. I think the steal numbers are going to start to come. His steal numbers over the last couple of games, he's had 5 over the last 2 games combined. So that is starting to kick back in for Bledsoe. And I still think that he is going to be a top 30, top 35 type of player for this season. Mike Conley, the next guy we talk about, he is the 99th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. I guess some people would be a bit surprised by that because he's been playing well. But again, it comes down to shooting. In the 7 games, he's played 34 minutes a night and averaging 18, 3, and 5.5. But 38% from the field and only 1 steal per game is really limiting what Conley can do from a fantasy point of view. If he can get those steal numbers back up, now he's never going to go back to being that 2 steals per game guy that he was back in his prime year 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, but 1.5 steals per game and getting that percentage back up. Now in his last non-injury season, he was a 46% shooter, and so far this season he is tracking at 38%. So there is a significant room for improvement from Conley still, and I think you can get him at a pretty decent rate still and have that top 50, top 40 upside for the rest of the season. DeAndre Jordan is the 109th ranked player over this last two-week period. And some of that, you know, that's a relatively common number for Jordan when you're looking at composite rankings and including free throw percentage because it had been so bad. But over the last six games, he's shooting 81% from the line. So it's not his free throw percentage that is dragging those numbers down. It's the fact that his usage is down at 11% and averaging only 7 points per game and taking under 5 field goal attempts per game. And the legendary high field goal percentage, which had been at over 70% for 3 seasons until it dropped down to 65 last season, is at 57 in these last 6 games. And that has obviously dropped the usage down in that he's just not as confident finishing. But the scoring is way down. The rebounds are fine. And the blocks are tracking back to what we saw with the Clippers at 0.8 blocks. There's been plenty talked about DeAndre not looking like he doesn't give a shit at all playing for the Mavericks. So while you know, there is still room for improvement, I wouldn't be necessarily be expecting huge, huge leaps forward, but I do think that he will be able to finish inside the top 100. He is the 36th ranked player over the course of the season, and that field goal percentage especially should be bumping back up to back over 60%. Which helps that category and helps his points category as well. The blocks, I'm not so sure that that's ever going to come back. It looks like his athleticism is killing him in that regard, and I'm not sure we're going to get that back for DeAndre Jordan. Gary Harris, another player who is really struggling at the moment, the 150th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. He just can't hit shots. It's as simple as that for Gaz. One of the real features of Gary Harris from a fantasy point of view is he is a guy that scores and does it at a really high efficiency as a shooting guard. The last 3 seasons, his field goal percentage has been 47, 50, and 49. And this season, he's down to 43. But over the last 7 games, 36%, including 28% from three. He cannot get a three-pointer to fall this year at all. At 27% for the season, and that's impacting what he can do. He should be hitting 2 to 2.5 threes per game with 18 points. Instead, over these last 7 games, he's at 14 points with 1.5 threes. He's not contributing in rebounds and assists very much. We know that. His steal numbers are well down as well. He was at 1.8 last season. He is at 1.2 this season. So, but it's, the major part of it is just getting the shots to fall, and they will, because I'm not... You know, Gary Harris is not going to stick as a 28% three-point shooter or shooting 40% from the field. It may not get back to the 50 and 40 split that he had a couple of years ago, but it is going to improve from here, and he will be much better than the 150th ranked player where he is at the moment over the last 2 weeks, or 104th on the season. Yeah, you should be expecting a top 60 to top 70 type of finish for Gaz Harris. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic, has had a couple of stinkers. He is the 178th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. Only 22 minutes per game. So that's the real pressure point there. As you know, those minutes are going to go up. He had that problem with his knee, but he is back and his last performance was fine. The shooting numbers are okay, although one of the things that really carried Dragic's fantasy value was a legendary field goal percentage. It dropped last season, and unlike Harris, I think that the Dragic drop could be permanent because of his advancing age, but those 22 minutes per night, they are definitely going to go up. So not much need for panic with Dragic, but don't expect him to go back to being a top 60 or top 70 type of guy. Eric Gordon appears on this list again because he is once again the 253rd ranked player in fantasy, playing 32 minutes per night and averaging 16 points per game. The efficiency is horrendous, 32% from the field, 23% from three, and only 77% from the line. The 16 points and 2 threes are nice, but only half a steal, 1.5 assists. He's just well down in that area. Now, I'm not thinking that Gordon is necessarily going to be a must-roster 10-team league guy this season. I stress about it all the time, is when he plays with Harden and Paul, he's a borderline rosterable guy. But the numbers will improve from here. You can expect, I think, a 10 percentage point increase in his field goal percentage, which adds another 2 to 3 points onto his scoring numbers and takes away that gigantic negative and will probably boost him 100 fantasy ranking points. On the flip side of things, let's look at players who are potentially overperforming what we can expect. And we'll start with the 17th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, Derrick Rose. Rose is playing 32 minutes per night and averaging 25 points, 3 rebounds, 4.7 assists, hitting 3 threes per game, but it's the efficiency that's really standing out. 52% from the field, and of course, an absolutely staggering 61% from three. This is a guy who couldn't hit 30% off his threes for really any of the past 4 seasons. In fact, his three-point percentage last year was 23. It was 22 the year before that. It was 29 the year before that, and it was 28 the year before that. So he is not going to continue to shoot at 61% as he has over the last six games, or even 48% as he has over the course of the season. The assists are nice from Rose, but once those three-pointers stop falling at that sort of a rate, the efficiency drops. You're going to lose 4 or 5 points off his scoring. An extra player added to the rotation in the Covington-Sharridge deal. The return of Jeff Teague and that efficiency dropping, I think you're going to see Rose, while still being a must-roster guy, he's not going to be really sniffing the top 50 and may fall outside the top 100, would be my guess. A player just behind him in the rankings is Wendell Carter Jr., who is the 18th ranked player over the last 2 weeks, averaging 14 and 10. He's hitting half a three. He's getting you over a steal and 2.6 blocks with 49 and 83%. Now, I said at the start of the season, if Carter is the starter, didn't mean for that to rhyme, he will be a top 50 guy. I didn't expect this level of production from him. A lot of that's coming from the inflated block numbers, which while they're high at 2.6 over these last seven games, I don't think it's outrageously high, but he is hitting 40% of his threes during that time for that field goal percentage of 49%. But in looking at his numbers, there's nothing that stands out as being crazy. 14 points in 29 minutes, that could easily continue. 49% from the field, that could actually bump up to 50-52% quite easily. 9.7 rebounds, maybe marginally high. 2.3 assists, fine. A steal a game, sure. 2.6 blocks, maybe marginally elevated. So while he is the 18th ranked player and it's probably not going to sustain at that sort of a level, I don't think that it's necessarily going to be a huge fall for Carter for the rest of the season, and a top 50 finish is clearly within grasp for him. The next player that I want to talk about is Pascal Siakam, who is the 25th ranked player over the last couple of weeks. 31 minutes a game, 17.5 points with 7 boards, 1.7 assists, 1.3 steals, and a staggering 69% from the field and 86% from the line, including 78% of his two-pointers. He has not missed a shot outside of 10 feet so far this season. He has only taken 3 of them, but with a guy that's only taken 110 field goal attempts per game, if he missed those 3 long-range shots, then the field goal percentage drops by 3 percentage points, and that is a big difference. So it just goes to show that how much variance there can be in small sample size. He's converting at 78% at the rim as well, which is a huge amount. There's a huge room for him to drop down. I just don't think 78% from 2 is going to stick. The 31 minutes is maybe marginally elevated. The last two games, he's only played 28 minutes, but he scored 23 and 22 points in both of those. Weirdly enough, only 3 rebounds in each of those two games, but his value is being significantly propped by his field goal percentage. So over this last 2 weeks, where he's the 25th ranked player, if we're looking at Z-score value, his Z-score for his field goals is 2.9. His next highest category is free throws at 0.8. So you're talking about almost 4 times as impactful he is in field goal percentage as he is in free throw percentage, which is significantly elevated anyway. He was a 62% free throw shooter last season, and now he's hitting 86%. So his two strongest categories are numbers which just really stick out like dog's balls to me as outliers. Still is a must-roster guy, but this top 25 type production, I fear there is going to be an element of a drop-off for Siakam. De'Aaron Fox is the 30th ranked player over the last couple of weeks. And like so many of these guys, it is fueled by an increase in shooting. 53% from the field Fox is going at. He was at 41% last season, and he's hitting 58% of his threes. So I would expect that number to come down. The assists, the steals, that's all normal. 4.5 rebounds, 7 assists, 1.1 steal, half a block. It's all normal. Only a 71% free throw shooter, that's a further indication that the mid-range shooting and the three-point shooting is going to fall, and his ranking is going to fall outside the top 50 and probably outside the top 60 when those numbers start to make a little bit more sense than what they currently are. The 54th ranked guy is Justin Holiday, who is available in a ton of leagues. He probably should be grabbed in a lot of them. 38 minutes per night, those minutes aren't going away. Only 12 points, but he's hitting 3 threes with 1.7 steals, and the threes are coming at a 40% clip. So while the minutes won't stick at this level for the entirety of the season, I don't think the threes will stick at this level, and the steals may drop, but I have a decent level of confidence that his steal rate will keep up. So he is a must-roster guy, just I wouldn't be expecting close to top 50 production from Justin Holiday. Dennis Schroeder is the 57th ranked player at the moment, 30 minutes a game, 19-5-4 with 1.5 steals. Very efficient, 47% shooting, and that's one of his issues. So that will drop, and the minutes will also drop when Russell Westbrook comes back. But I don't think many people are going to be fooled by Schroeder in terms of selling him high, but maybe they are. Maybe they think he can keep up this level of play and play 31 minutes a night and shoot 47%. I don't, but if they do, then give him to them. Shelvin Mack is the 70th ranked player over the last 2 weeks. It's because he's shooting 57% from the field and 50% from three. 13.7 points with 3.6 assists and 1.4 steals. I don't think that Shelvin is a 12-team league guy, and his numbers are wholly inflated by those excess minutes he's getting, the 28 minutes per game, which will dip, and more importantly, by that field goal percentage, which, of course, is not able to stick. Terry Ross is the 76th ranked player, averaging 27 minutes a night, 16 points with 3 threes and a steal, and he's doing it by shooting 43% per game. It's not outrageous that he can continue shooting at this level or scoring at this level or hitting threes at this level. So while I look at him as an overperforming player, because I think there will be a dip and maybe he loses some minutes when John Isaac returns, it's not as outrageous as expecting Shelvin Mack to continue to shoot 50% from three. Ross doesn't do too much else apart from points and threes, so if that does drop off, then his value is going to fall pretty considerably. But for now, he's a guy that you roster and you see how it goes from there. The last overperforming player I want to talk about is Alonzo Trier of the New York Knicks. 27 minutes per night makes him the 92nd ranked player, 14 points, 3 rebounds, 0.9 steals and 0.9 blocks, and doing it on 52, 87, and 43 as his shooting split. So obviously some high split numbers there for him. His efficiency has been significant this season. That's propping his numbers up. I'm also not sure he's going to be able to play 27 minutes per night as we move forward, and that's really illustrated by the last two games where he's played 18 and 22. His numbers are significantly inflated by the two games that Timmy Hardaway missed. He played 42 and 37 minutes in those ones. And scored, you know, a combined 37 points. And the last two games, 16 points with 7 assists. So it is, you know, worth paying attention to and looking. If someone looks at that number and goes, oh, you know, over the last 2 weeks, he's ranked 92, I've got to go and grab him. I'm not so sure that's the case. Unsustainable shooting numbers, the minutes have dropped back down, and he's going to move himself back into being a 16-team league guy rather than on the surface what looks like a must-roster 12-team league player. So that has your buy low and sell high guys for the last 2 weeks of fantasy basketball. Let's go into some DFS stuff now. Start with the perfect lineup over on DraftKings. Jim Harden, 53.25. David Nwaba had 30.25. Jeremy Lamb, 37.5. Yunus Jarepko, 36.75. Tristan Thompson, 44.25. Klay Thompson, 43.25. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, 34. And Nikola Jokic, 43.5 for a total of 322.75. That cost $50,000. The full salary on FanDuel: Chris Paul, 36. Quinn Cook, 29.8. Jez Lamb, 38.2. Jim Harden, 52.5. Jim Ennis, 30.3. Kevin Durant, 45.7. Yunus Jarepko, 32.6. Looney at 20.1. And Tristan Thompson at 39.7 for an extremely low total on FanDuel of 324.9. And that costs the full $60,000 dues. Let's look at this day over for DFS. There are 11 games on. We're going to be looking at FanDuel for today. Actually, you know what? Let's actually go to DraftKings and do a big slate for DraftKings today, like I mentioned on yesterday's show. So let's look at Philadelphia and Orlando. The Sixers are favored by 6, and the total is the old Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Yes. Although the original, I had to play that. The original spread I had was 221.5. It has pushed out to 222. Jimmy Butler will make his debut for the Philadelphia 76ers in this game. But looking at point guards, Benny Simmons is at 8,700 on DraftKings. I think the arrival of Butler makes him more of a GPP guy. We just don't know how things are going to run. You got Jaren Grant at 3,500 and DJ Augustin at 4,700. Very, very little interest in either of those guys for my mind. While Landry Shamet at 3,300, it would be a tournament-based guy, but realistically with Butler arriving, it's hard to see enough production coming that way. JJ Redick at shooting guard, 5,300, a nice performance from Redick last time out, 32 points there, a pretty strong history for Redick going up against this Orlando Magic team with some significant performances as well, averaging almost 30 points over the last three. So I think he is a decently strong option. Fournier at 6,200, despite a stinker in the middle there, has averaged 34 points over his last five. Some value, but not the number one guy. While Jimmy Butler at 8,200, first game for his new team, I don't feel super confident about having him as a cash guy. I like that the salary's come down by $600, but wouldn't be locking him in as a must-roster guy. Babinex at 3,600, Wilson Chandler, that is, while Az Gordon's at 77. I think Gordo is putting up, I know he's putting up some nice numbers. I think 40 points is a realistic goal for Aaron Gordon here, and that's value at 7,700. So he is in the mix against this Sixers team. Johnny Isaac, questionable at this stage. If he is out, you'll get Wesawundu and Jarrell Martin taking up those minutes with a bump for Terry Ross. I don't think we'd want to use Isaac even if he plays. And Ross becomes that guy that we look at who's at 5,000. And if Isaac is out, I'd be happily using Terry Ross. Embiid is at 10.5, averaging a monster 62 points the last three. I don't really think the addition of Butler is going to have a massively negative impact. And I think there's enough buffer here that you can use Embiid here. While Vucevic at 8,200 has got a pretty good record against the Philadelphia 76ers. In his 20 games against his former team, he averages an additional 4.5 points per game, 2.5 rebounds per game, 1 assist per game, and has a true shooting percentage of 4 percentage points higher, thanks to Terry over at Player Line Pro for that little breakdown on Vooch. I think Vooch is okay. I would take Embiid over him, though, pretty comfortably. While Mo Bamba at 38, yeah, I know there are going to be better options out there than Mohamed Bamba. Over on FanDuel, Babinek at minimum salary is a tournament type of guy. He hasn't produced much, but there's a 20-point possibility here. I like Aaron Gordon at 78. I like Embiid at 11,000 as well. Redick at 54 is also decently strong. I think I'd fade Butler at the 8,700 that he comes in at over on FanDuel. Let's go on to the next game. We're looking at the Cleveland Cavaliers, the only team on a back-to-back. They are taking on the Washington Wizards. The Wizards are 11.5-point favorites, and the total is 220. The big question, I guess, is will Otto Porter ever wake up from whatever bullshit slumber this is that he is in? We know that George Hill is out, and we can assume that Kyle Korver is out as well as Chetty Osman. That was the report from Larry Drew that those guys would be out. Sexton is at 5,000, the Padawan. I'm happily using him in cash. He's going to give you this 26 to 30-point performance. No worries with him. Jordy Clarkson at 56 also is a 30-point type guy, so I think him and Sexton are both really good options. Well, Johnny Wall, if you're spending up, he's given you 50 a night over the last three. He averages 50 the last three times out against Cleveland. The defense is not really going to be able to stop him, and he also gets a pretty significant bump in his numbers career against Cleveland, averaging an additional 2 points per game, half an assist, and way more efficient 3.5 extra percentage points on his true shooting against the Cleveland Cavaliers. So Johnny Wall is in play there. Also in this matchup. Nwaba's at 3,200. Strong game from him today. 30 points. Has done well against the Wizards. Against the Magic in the past as a member of the Bulls. With Korver out, I think you could consider him at 3,200. One of your GPP guys who can rack up some decent numbers. I wouldn't feel great in cash. I'd feel much better in cash with Bradley Beal at 7,500, who is putting up some good numbers, 42 average the last three times out against the Magic as well. Rocket Rodney Hood and the plumber J.R. Smith, they're not for me. Otto Porter at 4,800, that is a very, very low price for Porter, mainly because he's doing nothing. He has played well against Orlando. They've played them twice already this year. He's been okay in those matchups. I do think that I think we've got to consider that a 35-point upside play, which at 4,800 with that lowered price for Porter would make him a tournament guy. But I don't have really too much faith in Scott Brooks at this point to play him the minutes that we would require. Markieff's at 4,600. He is just up and down, and you can't rely upon him in cash under any circumstances, really. While Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
Big game last time out from Jeff. So I keep saying that the Wizards are playing the Magic here. I don't know why I keep saying that, because they're not. They're playing the Cavs. Sorry about that. I had the Magic on my brain from the last game. Jeff Green at 4,200 is actually averaging 26 points over the last five games. I don't fully trust Green, but I think you could look at Porter and Green as alternate guys, because if Porter plays 30 minutes, there won't be enough for Green, but if he gets in this 21-minute funk that Brooks has put him in, then we could see 30 minutes out of Jeff Green. So there is, I guess, some appeal there in an alternating lineup with Otto Porter, but not putting those guys together. Larry Nance is at 5,500. He had 28 points today. I feel like he's almost a lock to get that value with Osman out here. Well, Dwight at 5,800. I love that price for Dwight Howard. I don't really love Dwight Howard, but I love this situation. 30 points should be coming for him with a significant upside against this Cavs team. Tristan Thompson is the same price as Dwight Howard. He's actually outproducing Dwight at that 5,800 mark, but will he be as able to grab those boards against Howard that he was against Cody Zeller? He's been super aggressive offensively on the offensive boards as well, so maybe you could consider Thompson. I don't feel super comfortable about having a $5,800 cash play with Tristan Thompson involved in it. Let's have a look over on FanDuel. I like Nance at 6,300, I like Beal at 8,700, and then you've got Oubre at 42, who's an interesting tournament guy on FanDuel, and Markeith at 5,000. There's some tournament upside there with him, with, again, the much tighter pricing over on FanDuel. I feel like the tighter pricing on FanDuel takes away a significant amount of the skill that is involved in DFS. A lot more luck comes into it. So, yeah, I'm not a massive fan of how tight their pricing is so far this season, and I don't expect much of that to change. The next game we look at is the Miami Heat and the Brooklyn Nets. The Heat are favored by 2. The total is 219.5. Caris LeVert is obviously out. How will the Nets respond? Will they galvanize and play better, or will they still be sort of lost trying to find themselves with their main or their best player not in the lineup? We don't know who the starter is going to be. Spencer Dinwiddie started the second half last time for Brooklyn, but they could go with Damari Carroll. They could try Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. They could try the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb. There are a multitude of ways they will go, but almost without doubt, Kenny Atkinson will give them all 27 or 28 minutes, really negating the benefit of being a starter. Dinwiddie is at 4,900, so I do think that he's played very well against the Heat in the past. There's an extra opportunity. I do like using Dinwiddie here on DraftKings, as well as D'Angelo Russell at 6,700. They should be able to share the court a little bit more in this scenario as Jumpin' Joe Harris pushes up to the small forward position. So I think there is some value for those guys, both Russell and Dinwiddie, in this game just because of the situation with LeVert's injury. The iron shoulder, Goran Dragic at 6,300. Massive game for him last time, but has struggled a little bit this season. I'm not super into using Dragic here. While Dwayne Wade is out, Tyler Johnson at 4,100 does have some a pretty good cash floor. Justice Winslow, listed as a point guard small forward, is okay, but 5,300, he has failed to get anywhere near that recently. Then let's go to some of your wings. Joshie Richardson's at 6,800. Has played well, but hasn't quite been at that level. I think there are better options out there. Joe Harris at 47 would only be in play for tournaments, same as the Duke. Actually, that's not true. The Duke Wayne Ellington at 3,900, I don't mind that as a cash floor with that situation with Dwayne Wade having him out of action. Scooter Magruder's at 5,200, that's a fade. The Blue Swimmer at 38, also one of your tournament-type upside guys. In fact, I think even for cash, you should feel okay about using Crabb with LeVert sidelined. Damari Carroll's at 41. There are better options out there, I believe, for that one. Jared Dudley at 33. He had 24 points last game. I guess that we have to check on Jared Allen, because if Jared Allen is out, it boosts Dudley by playing Rondae Hollis-Jefferson more at center. So if Allen is out, I think Dudley could have some low-end cash value. I like Rondae at 5,200 with the uncertainty of Allen. It boosts him up. He had 37 last game, 5,200. Some extra minutes coming his way with Damari Carroll playing more of the three now than the four. I think that Rondae at 52 has some good value, and he has played well against the Heat in the past. 35 average over the last three times out. Allen at 5,100 recovering from this illness. I think that I think he's a chance to have value if he plays. I wouldn't feel super confident, while Hassan Whiteside at 8,400 has struggled against the Nets the last couple of games. Only played 24 minutes though, so that's something to bear in mind. He was going at 1.5 points per minute, so if he can get 30 minutes, then he should be able to beat that 8,400 price tag. But I'm not super invested in Hassan Whiteside in this matchup. On FanDuel, I like Dinwiddie a lot at 5,800. Not much else is really standing out. I think 9-2 for Whiteside's probably too expensive. 7-5 for D'Angelo, probably a little bit too high as well. 4,800 for Joe Harris. It takes away a lot of the upside. I'd much prefer the 4,400 on the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb. Let's go to the next game. We're talking the Bulls and the Celtics. The Celtics are favored by 12. The total is 211. We hear talk of a potential starting lineup change for the Celtics. Gordon Hayward reporting or saying that, you know, he would be prepared to come off the bench. Maybe it's Marcus Smart who starts. Maybe it's Marcus Morris who starts. Maybe it's Jaylen Brown who comes to the bench. So there could be a change in the footing here for the, a change afoot for the Celtics in their lineup. After a couple of struggles recently, at point guard, Zach LaVine's at 7,900. The efficiency is dipping a bit, but he's still giving you 40 points a night. I really, really like him for cash. While Marcus Smart at 39. If we see Smart move into that starting lineup, I think at 3,900, I'd be all about using that. Antonio Blakeney at 3,300. With a blowout on deck, we could see some extra Blakeney minutes, and we know that he has not met a shot that he didn't want to take. So that gives him some 25, 28 point upside, which would return some pretty significant value. Of course, if that is the way that it went. Terry Rozier's at 4,300. I'm not super feeling him, though. Justin Holiday at 47. He is rock solid at the moment, getting you steals and threes and playing a shit ton of minutes. I really like him for cash at that salary. While Jaylen Brown at 4,400 has been disappointing, but as Terry lets me know, Jaylen against the Bulls averages an additional 5 points per game and 15 percentage points higher on his true shooting with a bump in usage in the 7 games he's played against the Bulls. It is a small sample size, but that is a staggering amount. So that is something worth paying attention to, averaging 35 DraftKings points the last 3 times against Chicago as well. At 4,400, that is some serious tournament upside for Jaylen Brown. Gordy Hayward at 51, I'm not really sure we can use him here, although he did beat value last time with 28 points. A really good matchup for him. Maybe this is the game that gets him going. I'll let someone else figure that out. At small forward, Jabari Parker's at 56. He's not wowing us, but even in the shit games, he still gets you 25 or 26, which is fine value at 5,600. While Jayce Tatum's at 66, broke out of his slump last game, had 43 points. I'm not thinking that that's a good price, though, for Jason Tatum. The big men, we look at Al Horford at 6,400. Bulls, big men against the Bulls have played very well this season, so that would be a way to look at Horford. I'm not super into him here, but I think that's a definite positive there. Then you got Robin Lopez or Aaron Baines, who I'm not super interested in, but the block Panther, Wendell Carter Jr., at 5,700, he is giving you 25. In fact, his lowest score in his last 5 games has been 26 points. And at 5,700, that's a really strong floor. Now, of course, against Al Horford, that can be a difficult matchup for centers. But even in games where it is a difficult matchup and he gets into foul trouble, like he puts up big games against Anthony Davis or Nikola Jokic, I feel pretty good about Carter being able to push towards that 30-point mark. And I think you should feel relatively good about it as well. Over on FanDuel, LaVine is the one I like here, 8,700. The 4,700 for Jaylen is definitely in play, even though he has been stinking. Still want to look at that more for tournaments. Justin Holiday looks pretty okay here as well. Carter at 6,900.
Giggity!
That's probably pushing it a little bit too far. I wouldn't feel super great about using him. While Ryan Archer-Jackineau at 4,400. I think that's a pretty good cash play on FanDuel, actually, for Archer-Jackineau, who is going to be the starter again and get you 30-plus minutes, as he has been doing. Let's go to the next game. It's the Detroit Pistons and the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 10. The total is 224 points. Injury-wise, I think we're all clear here in this game. Freddie VanVleet at $4,000 as a point guard doesn't interest me, while Kyle Lowry has been disappointing the last couple of games, just 22 points last game, averaging 28 over the last three. There is an opportunity here for him to bounce back at a reduced salary. I think that you should consider that for tournaments, but not for cash. Ish Smith not really giving us too much, while Reggie Jackson at 5,600 has been playing well, but against the Lowry and a Raptors defense, I think I'll end up fading a lot of the Pistons guys here. Dan Green's at 4,000 has been bad. You can only really consider Green in tournament lineups anyway, while the fun guy, Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
He is at 8,600. I would take that over Kyle Lowry's 8,100. He's giving you 39 points over the last 5, which is okay at 8,600. It's not quite where it needs to be, but I still think that he's a solid option here. Reggie Bullock at 41 exploded last game, but he had been struggling prior to that. He's okay, especially with that price. Any higher, I probably wouldn't be interested in Bullock. But at that price, I think, you know, I should look at him and go, well, 23 or 24 points is a realistic floor for Bullock, so I'm okay. I'm okay with using him in this matchup. Langston Galloway is getting some minutes, but doesn't really interest me all that much. The Stan Johnson, Glenn Robinson small forward situation is a strong fade. At the big men spots, Jonas Valanciunas at $5,000. I think there's a chance that he will start in this one. The matchup situation for him against Andre Drummond, he has played well in the past, averages an additional 4 points per game against Drummond and the Pistons, and is more efficient as well. A true shooting percentage boost of 4 percentage points there also. So I think that Valanciunas will get the start, maybe gives him a couple of extra minutes, and at $5,000, I think he can get you 25 or 26 points. I'm not loving it for DFS purposes. I'm not sure that the ceiling is high enough, but he should be able to produce more in this game than he has in some of his others. Blakey Griffin's at 9,400 has done very well against the Raptors in the past, 43 average, but is in a little bit of a slump at the moment. Griffo, the shots aren't falling. There are better guys around. Drummo's at 93. He's just pulling 20-20s out of his ass whenever he chooses to. This is another opportunity for a 50-point performance. I don't think you can go wrong, really, with using Andre Drummond. Serge Ibaka at 62 also just on an insane run of form. I think that the potential move to the bench with Drummond around might limit what Ibaka can do. So probably in that fade territory, while Pascal Siakam's at 5,900. His lowest score over his last five has been 29. Really hard to go against Siakam with the way that he is playing. At some point, the shots aren't going to fall, and that's going to drop a lot of his value down because the scoring drops down in that situation as well. But you know, I think you have to look at him. He wouldn't be my number one guy that I'd be looking to lock in, though. On FanDuel, I like the fun guy at 9,200. Valanciunas at 56 has got a level of appeal there, and Lowry at 85, given some of the other pricing, makes a bit more sense on FanDuel than what it does over on DraftKings. Drummond at 10,000. It looks high, but with how he's been playing, how he's played against the Raptors in the past, and Valanciunas with a 54 FanDuel point average the last three times, I think you could feel okay about spending $10,000 on Drummond. It wouldn't be my recommended guy to spend it on, but I think you could feel, you know, decently okay about doing it. Let's go to the next game. It is the New York Knicks and the Oklahoma City Thunder. No spread, no total. As of the time of me writing this out, Westbrook's status was up in the air, but of course he is ruled out of this game, so we're going to get a boost for Dennis Schroeder and a boost for Paul George. Let's talk about the point guard situation. Frank Ntilikina played 6 minutes last game. Trusting David Fizdale's rotation is about as useful as trusting a condom made out of paper. You can't do it. Ntilikina, why am I bothering? You can't do it. Alonzo Trier at 4,500 has put up some pretty strong games recently, but again, you can't trust this rotation. There is marginal upside, but is there enough to roster him? Probably not. And then you've got Fat Face Ray Felton or Manny Moutier at 36 or 37. Not a lot of point guard love here. Dennis Schroeder is your point guard shooting guard guy at 7,800. I think he's really, really strong against this Knicks defense in what should be a fairly comfortable victory for the Thunder. Timmy Hardaway's at 7,000. I like the fact that that price is down at that 7,000 mark. I think Hardaway's good for at least 30 here, a relatively strong cash play with legit 50-point upside. Well, Damo Dotson has really fallen off. I think you can leave him alone. Same with MC Hamadou Diallo. Jeremy Grant at 4,700. I think he's a 25-point guy. He's been a little bit underwhelming the last couple, but this matchup is very, very friendly to big men. And yeah, Grant can block shots, he can get rebounds, he can be efficient. So at 4,700, I think Jez has some cash value. While Paul George at 96, I like it for cash. I like it for tournaments quite a bit. The assists have been up with Russ out. He's averaging 53 over his last three. This should be another 50-type performance from Paulie George. Hezonja at 3,800, no. Terry Ferguson, that's a big no. Let's go. Oh, the Fort, Kevin Knox, 3,900. I like that for Knox. He had 21 points last game in 26 minutes. A sub 4,000 price tag for a guy who's going to take some shots and could play 26 or 27 minutes. It's hard to trust Fizdale, but I do think that Knox moves into that territory that his price is cheap enough that you can consider him. Steve Adams at 7,300. I'm all in on Steve Adams against the Knicks. Totally love that. Nerlens Noel, Patrick Patterson, No. Then the Knicks big men. Enes Kanter, Noah Vonleh, Mitchell Robinson. 6,600 for Kanter against his former team. He has struggled against Oklahoma City with a 21-point average the last three times out. He is averaging 41 points in his last five games so far this season. But minutes-wise, who knows what Fizdale's going to do. It makes him risky at that salary. Mitch Robinson at 4,100. He had 27 points last time with the 9 blocks. Not interested there. Vonleh at 5,100 also. Too highly priced and too much variability in what Fizdale does with these guys. On FanDuel, no one really stands out as a great option. You could look at Steve Adams, but he's at 8,000. That's a bit high. Paul George at 10,300 is probably the best guy to look at. And Kevin Knox at 4,400 does have a level of appeal on FanDuel. But overall, this is tracking as a bit of a stay away game over on FanDuel with the way that the pricing shakes out. The New Orleans Pelicans and the Minnesota Timberwolves, no spread or no total also released for this game. Dario Saric and Bob Cove are likely to make their debut. Nikola Mirotic and Alfred Payton are questionable, while Andrew Wiggins and Jeff Teague are both questionable as well.
My name is Jeff.
So a whole bunch of different scenarios. This has the look of a stay-away cash situation, especially if we don't get news on those guys until or when lineups lock, especially on FanDuel when you don't have that option to change. Because you know, Covington, Saric, we assume, and we don't know how they're going to fit. Wiggins and Teague, are they in or out? There's an opportunity for Rose to get a big bump. But if all four of those guys play, then maybe his value drops down in this scenario. Where does Saric and Taj Gibson, how do they mesh? Where is Covington fitting in? There are a lot of question marks, especially on the Timberwolves side here. I like that Alfred Payton is down at 5,200. And if he plays, I think that that would be a really sneaky tournament guy to look at. While Teague at 5,600 had 47 points in that game back. And shockingly enough, is questionable with knee soreness. Because Tom Thibodeau has zero idea how to medically manage any of his team. And he needs to be fired. It is as clear as anything that he should not be coaching an NBA team. But he continues to ruin guys. And we'll see how that pans out for him. Surely it won't be good. Drew Holiday is at 8,500. If Alfred Payton is out, Drew is giving you 50 a night. So if Payton is out, then I think that Drew is smashable for a cash player there. Well, Derrick Rose at 7,200. Well, I think that if we have all of those guys playing, Rose would be a fade. If Teague and Wiggins are out, then Rose is a cash play. That's all it's going to come down to, in my opinion. Your shooting guards, Wiggo's at 5,700, has been putting up good numbers, 33-point average over the last three, but the addition of Covington and Saric could put a little bit of a cramp on what Wiggins is doing. I think it's more tournament than cash, just given the uncertainty of how this is going to go. Plus, he is questionable with a thigh, but we know that with Thibodeau, even if you are questionable, that still means you play 40 minutes. There's no easing guys in or going soft on guys, because heaven forbid that you care about someone's health. Etuan Moore at 4,900, red hot last game. We cannot expect 73% shooting for Etuan. Does nothing in the other categories, so 4,900 is probably a little bit high. While Covington's at 4,700. A lot of, we're unsure about how that's going to work. I feel pretty good about Covington. If there was anyone on this Timberwolves team I was going to use in cash outside of Karl Anthony Towns, it probably would be Covington, just given how cheap that price is. Mirotic at 7,500, if he is ready to go, I'd feel pretty good against a team that allows big men to put up some good numbers. But of course, if he is out, we're looking at Julius Randle getting a big bump. Randle is at 6,900.
Giggity!
He's averaged 38 the last three games without Mirotic around, and you would smash that if Nico happens to be sidelined. Tone Davis at 11,300, you should feel pretty good about using Davis, although he has struggled significantly against the Wolves in the past. 38-point average over his last three games. He's averaging 64 in the last three games this season, but in the Wolves matchup, it's been a struggle. I still think you should feel okay about him at that price. Townsie at 95. I love Towns at 9,500. One of my best cash plays of the day, I believe. Taj Gibson at 48. Really hard to trust that. He's averaging 33 the last three games. I don't know what Saric is going to do to his playing time. So maybe you could throw Taj as a low roster guy in a tournament, thinking that everyone gets off him and Thibodeau goes out and still plays him 34 minutes. It would be nonsense if he did. But it's Tom Thibodeau. So we'll see exactly how that all goes down. Saric at 45 would only be of use, in my opinion, in a tournament setup. Let's look over on FanDuel. Townsie at 10,500, a really strong play there. Wiggins at 67 would have some appeal, but there's just so many unknowns with that Timberwolves team. Derrick Rose at 72, I'd like in cash if those two guys are ruled out. Same with Randle at 73 for the Pelicans if Mirotic happens to be sidelined, and Holiday at 9,000 if Payton is out, is looking to be in a good spot for New Orleans. The Memphis Grizzlies and the Milwaukee Bucks. The Bucks are favored by 9.5 points. The total is 216. Brook Lopez has been on fire recently, so we'll see if that can continue. For the point guards, Shelvin Mack is at 3,800. He's getting big minutes. He's giving you about 20 a night, and he's got a very weirdly good record against the Bucks. I think at 3,800, he is worthy of putting into your tournament player pool. Wouldn't want him for cash, but for tournament, sure. I like the fact that Mike Conley is down to 6,800. I like that in cash. I think, yeah, 30-point minimum makes a really good floor. 45-point upside is a good spot here for Conley. Bledsoe at 6,300 has struggled, but still averaging 36 or 37 over his last three games, which would be fine at 6,300. I take Conley ahead of him, but if you don't have that extra $500, I think the Bledsoe is worth looking at. The pace, though, in this game will probably be reduced. That's how Memphis has been playing it. Brogo is at 5,200, putting up some very, very strong performances lately. But Budenholzer does tend to have a bit of a quick hook if the games get out of control, and there is a chance of a blowout here, so that could limit some of these Bucks guys in particular. Paddy Connaughton's averaging 22 over the last three, $3,300. Well, do you? You probably don't, but it's worth considering. We know that Dylan Brooks is out for the Grizzlies, Omri Caspi's out, Chandler Parsons is out, so Wayne Seldon or Marshawn Brooks. Maybe you look at Brooksy at 3,300 as a tournament upside guy with those wing guys missing. I like Chris Middleton at 67. That feels like a strong, strong cash play. And then we go on to the other positions. Jaren Jackson Jr., Triple J at 5,600. 40 points last time on DraftKings. I feel good about him getting 30, so I like him in cash situations. While Yanni Antetokounmpo at 11,000. I feel great about him. I feel more comfortable using 11 on Yanni than I do, say, the 11-3 on Tone Davis. From that last game. Centers, Marc Gasol has been killing it. He's at 7,100. I think you're getting 35 out of Gasol is a reasonable expectation with that 45-point upside, so I think he's worthy in cash. While Brook Lopez at 5,000, obviously crushing it, but how does he go matched up against Gasol? That could be an issue for him when they're running pick and pops and pick and rolls with Gasol, Conley. That could limit what Lopez can do, so I'd only be looking at Brook as a tournament guy, and then you could maybe pivot to Ersan Ilyasova because he could get some extra minutes if Gasol is really hurting Brook. But Brook has been fantastic recently, killing it, putting up big numbers in nearly every game that he has played over the past week. On FanDuel, Middleton, Yanni, Bledsoe, I think all of those guys have cash value, assuming this game can be kept close, which puts an element of doubt into them. Triple J at 68 is probably a little bit too high. Conley at 78, I think he's considerably too high. Didn't talk about Kyle Anderson. I think he's okay, but I don't really think that he is a fantastic guy to look at on either FanDuel or DraftKings. Let's go to the next game, the Utah Jazz and the Dallas Mavericks. The Jazz are favored by 4.5, and the total is 213.5. Not the greatest matchup for DeAndre Jordan heading up against Rudy Gobert. Wes Matthews missed last game. He's upgraded to probable, so that's going to limit what Dorian Finney-Smith can do. Finney-Smith played over 30 minutes last game, only had 15 points, but still put up decent enough performances. The Donovan Mitchell's at 7,400, really underwhelming so far this season, but I think you want to look at him as a tournament guy. Ravishing Rick Rubio at 5,800, struggled with fouls last game, not super confident there. While Luka Doncic at 6,900 is averaging 35 over his last five. I think the Jazz defensively might be one where I do fade Doncic out in this one. He's been pretty consistent, putting up some pretty nice performances. I'm not certain about Doncic in this one. I might leave him alone. 5,400 for Dennis Smith, who's been very disappointing lately. I will stay far away from that with the way that he and JJ Barea have been splitting minutes. Whereas Barea at 4,300, if you knew that they were going to split minutes, you'd love Barea for cash. I'm not sure about that. Therefore, I'm not sure about him in cash, and I don't think his upside is high enough in tournaments. Jingle and Joe's at 6,100. He's back cranking at the moment. 36 average over the last three. Another good opportunity for Ingles to put up big numbers. So I like Ingles here. Wes Matthews is not really doing it for me. Alec Burks the same. The pencil, Harrison Barnes, 5,500. Massive game last time out for Barnes. I actually like him at 5,500. I think that's right about that floor level for Barnes. And we saw that he can push into the mid to high 30s when things get going. I like that price for Barnes to be an option. Jay Crowder, not really feeling that. The big man, DeAndre Jordan, is at 6,500. The matchup is tough. He's been a little bit underwhelming lately. The blocks are off, but he has played okay against Gobert. 37 points the last three times out. I would use him with caution. It wouldn't be my number one priority, while Gobert at 8,100 is giving you 40 a night at the moment. That's fine. There are better center options around, in my opinion. Kleber and Powell, not really feeling too much about them, nor with Derek Favors. On FanDuel, Jordan's at 75 because his production has been limited. There's some tournament upside there. Ingles at 6'4", I like, and the Don. I was going to call him the Mitch. He's not the Mitch, he's the Don. He is at 8,300. There is upside in Mitchell, but obviously we're not relying upon him. Gobert at 8,500. Trax is an okay center play over on FanDuel. Let's go through to the next game. It is the San Antonio Spurs and the Phoenix Suns. The Spurs actually are favored by 5, and the total is 211. The Suns are absolutely horrendous at the moment. The Spurs put out an erroneous injury report today that had Derek White out with a torn meniscus. It turns out they got the names wrong, and it was Lonnie Walker who was out with that torn meniscus. So White is fine. He is ready to go. But Rudy Gay will be out along with Pau Gasol, as Gay is resting in this game. Derek White is still priced at 4,700 on DraftKings. He's been up and down with his performances, but 35 points is definitely within reach for White. So I love him as a tournament guy. Brini Forbes is at 39. I see no upside for him, really, in this one. As Kyle McEwen likes to call him, the library, Devin Booker at 7,600. I think I'm digging that. I think I'm going to go with the library. Devin Booker at 7,600 has been a little bit off because his shooting hasn't been there, but that price is great. So I'd be happy to use Booker, get myself a 32-point floor, and 50-point upside is a legitimate possibility. But his shot has been way off. Pat Mills and Isaiah Kanan, nah. DeMar DeRozan, 9,000. You're going to get pretty much 40 out of DeRozan, which again is a pretty good floor. I'd rather take someone like Booker over DeRozan just to save myself that salary for other areas, but DeRozan's pretty rock solid in cash and has some tournament value. Interestingly for the Suns, Ali Okobo has been sent to the G League and De'Anthony Melton is not at the G League team, so we could be seeing Melton move in as the backup point guard, so he could be that real, real interesting $3,000 minimum salary guy that nobody really is on, who can come out there and have 3 steals and 3 blocks with 6 assists in 18 minutes. That sounds crazy, but he can do it. So that could be that really, really weird one that could go for 1 point, but could also go for 28 points in a weird blowout with Kanan really struggling. So just keep an eye on De'Anthony Melton. Not everyone will be aware that he is not on the Suns report as being with the G League, but Ali Okobo is, and they have ruled Okobo out of this game. So I would assume Melton is in, ready to go. Just something to keep in mind. It could probably shit the bed, but it's interesting. Mikal Bridges was great last game. He is at 3,700. They need to play him 25 to 28 minutes a night. He got 28 points in 26 minutes last game. At 3,700, I love that. Really hard to go past unless Kokoschkov screws it up. While TJ Warren at 5,800. Man, this guy is on fire. 40-point average over the last three. Like it. Might as well use him. Feel fairly good about that. Dante Cunningham and Trevor Ariza, I feel the opposite of good about. DeAndre Ayton at 6,400. He claims he's going to turn things around in this game. Who knows if that's true? That could all be words, but at that, well, they are words. At that price, I think he's worth looking at. Well, LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,300. You feel like it's a 40-pointer coming against this Suns team who really hasn't been able to stop anybody at all this season. Over on FanDuel, I think Bryn Forbes at 37 is a tournament-type guy, given the lack of high-upside players around. I like Derek White at 56, I like Aldridge, I like Ayton, and I like Devin Booker, as well as Mikal Bridges at that $3,900 price tag over on FanDuel. The last game of the day is the Portland Trailblazers against the LA Lakers. Damian Lillard is listed as probable with a knee issue, so obviously probable means that he is probably going to play. So that's a positive there for him, assuming he is ready to go, which again, we do assume. At point guard, Seth Curry's at 3,100. I don't know why I mentioned him. Lonzo Ball's at 5,400. A strong game from Lonzo last time, but you can't trust what he or Rajon Rondo are going to do. So really hard to rely upon either of those guys. As for Lillard, he kills the Lakers. A 50-point performance would be no surprise. I really like him. Not worried about the knee. 8,800, really good option, I think. Well, CJ McCollum at 6,600. Has turned things around a little bit. Again, does well against the Lakers. Not super as into him as I am with Lillard. Evan Turner. Mo Harkless is out, by the way, as well. Josh the Hitman Hart is at 4,200. No interest. LeBron James, 10,300.
LeBron James.
Yeah, love LeBron here. He kills the Blazers. You know, 50, 55, 60 points is a realistic possibility for LeBron. He averages 56 the last three times on DraftKings against the Blazers, and I love him at 10-3. I'd take him over Davis and over Yanni at that extra prices that those guys are at. The future MVP, Kyle Kuzma at 6,000, feels like a strong cash play, while Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
Are we going to get good Aminu, or are we going to get shit Aminu? Well, he's been shit against the Lakers with a 20-point average the last three times in 30 minutes. I'm not sure that he is the guy that we want to go to on this extended slate. Brandon Ingram's at 5,700, been very disappointing. I think we can fade him. At center, Tyson Chandler at 34. I think Chandler's going to get me 20 points, and that makes him an okay cash guy. Nurkic at 6,500 does well against this Lakers team as well. Now, the addition of Chandler might change things, a little bit more defensive presence, but I think Nurk at 6,500 is okay, while JaVale McGee's price continues to come down, and it's come down to a level where I think it's appropriate. 5,600 now for a guy that, even with Chandler around, had 28 points last game, so you give me 28 points at 5,600, I'll sign off on it, I'll be okay with it. Not my number one center guy, but I still think that now he is coming into that area where he can have some value. Let's wrap it up on FanDuel. I think LeBron at 11-2 is a strong play. I like McGee and Kuzma over there as well. Not much else really standing out. Lillard at 9-3 is also looking okay, but I think the 8,000 for Nurkic on FanDuel is probably just a little bit too high. Let's go through the studs and values now. On DraftKings, my best stud is LeBron at 10-3, and my value is Dinwiddie at 4,900. On FanDuel, it's LeBron at 11-2, and my value is Larry Nance at 6,300. On Yahoo, my stud is Johnny Wall at 42, and my value is Larry Nance at 14. On Moneyball, actually, that's the wrong day for Moneyball, because Moneyball's prices at the time of recording weren't out. Shame. On DraftStars, the best stud is LeBron at 18,670, and the best value play over there is Derek White at 7,320. Let's look at today's best bet. I'm taking the Blazers plus 2.5 against the Lakers. We'll see how that goes down. The Lakers just managed to get over the Hawks in the last game, so we'll see how that one goes. Guys, subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube, where you can leave a comment. Hit that subscribe button, give it a thumbs up, and hit the bell for notifications. We are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Jared Bayless.